Hello and welcome to Adoption Shared. I'm your host, Eddie Elliott. We're excited to be back with our third season of Adoption Shared, which has been created by, with, and for members of the Black community and with the support of Adopt London. Black Voices aims to highlight the currently underrepresented personal journeys of Black people involved in adoption, sharing the joys, challenges, and possibilities, and the variety of adoption journeys and experiences. Follow us on Twitter at WAF Adoption using the hashtag #AdoptionShared. Hello and welcome to today's episode. I have a very special guest with me today, Esther. Esther and I met maybe a year ago, actually, in fact, when I sat on her approval panel. So it's so wonderful that she's here and we've come full circle and she's actually got children placed with her. So I'm so excited that she's here to share her story with us. Hello, Esther, and welcome.
Hi, Eddie. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for agreeing to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. So we met on your approval panel about just over a year ago, yes. And I didn't click that I knew you until I actually saw your face up on my screen just now, which is wonderful. Tell us what has been happening. Take us back to the very beginning. Tell us how it all came about.
So in terms of how it all came about, adoption has been something that I've thought about for a very long time. I remember being about 11 or 12, and one of my best friends and I had this vision where we were both going to adopt 6 babies. And we used to spend our weekends scrolling through the catalogues, looking at buggies and cots and high chairs, things like that. Obviously, had no real idea of what the adoption process was like, or really the reality of trying to raise 6 babies, even things like having to push 3 double buggies. So adoption had been always something that I thought about. As I'd got older and as I approached my 30s, I started thinking more about having a family. It had been something that I'd always wanted. I was single and adoption gave me the option of creating a family as a single person.
It's very interesting that you mentioned the idea of adoption, you know, was planted in your mind from a very early age. Do you know why that was? Was there any context for it in your wider circle, friends?
There are some of my family members have adopted, but I think for my friend and I at that time, it was seen as a way where we could get a lot of children in a very short space of time.
Okay, great. Fair enough.
And as an 11-year-old, I think that's what we wanted. We loved babies and
yes.
We wanted babies.
Fair enough. And so fast forward to your 30s and you're thinking you want to create your family. And why or how was adoption top of your list? How did you get to that decision?
Well, I'd had a very stark reminder of how short life was when I lost my mum back in 2018. Mm-hmm. And that was a wake-up call in terms of life is very short. And don't wait for tomorrow, do things today. And when we entered lockdown in 2020, it really gave me some clarity in terms of what do I want to achieve? What do I want to happen? What hasn't happened yet? And I was running with some friends, actually, and I spoke to one of my friends and I said, you know, I've always thought about adoption. It's something that I really want to do. I feel that I'm ready. I'm at the right stage of my life to welcome children. You know, I felt that I'd achieved what I wanted career-wise. I had my house. I had a really good circle of friends, really good family. But what was missing was motherhood. So I spoke to my friend and she said, you know, basically, what are you waiting for? I think you'd be a fantastic mother. Go for it. Mm-hmm. And I came back home and my sister was living with me at the time. And I spoke to her about it. And she was just like, I don't know what's taking you so long. And just having that reassurance from my friend and my sister, I immediately Googled adoption agencies. And I think within 15 minutes, I was booked on to 2 online information sessions. I just thought, I'm going to do it now. I'm not going to wait any longer.
I mean, that's very reminiscent of myself and my partner when we were adopting. I mean, it literally happened within the space of a week. We decided we were doing it and then we were booked on all this information evening. So I can really identify with that. I was going to ask you, so at the beginning of the journey, obviously we're focusing on, you know, the Black adopter experience. At the very beginning, did you think as a Black single female, there was going to be any kind of extra hurdles to overcome or any barriers to you becoming a parent? What was that? Or did that not even enter your mind at any point?
I wondered if there would be any barriers with me being single, but not necessarily with me being a black female.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reasons why I didn't think there'd be barriers to being a black female was because, one, it was the year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I was living in London, such a diverse city, mm-hmm. and I was using an adoption agency based in London.
Yeah.
So I wasn't necessarily thinking of any race-related barriers, but I wondered whether there'd be any stigma, any sort of stigma attached to me being a single person wanting to adopt.
And where did you think the stigma might come from? You know, do you think it would come directly from the adoption world in terms of, you know, the agencies you were approaching, or maybe people in your community? Where did you think the stigma might
emerge? I thought it would come through the adoption agency.
Okay.
Just in terms of what was their preference in terms of who they wanted to raise their children. You know, they had a legal responsibility for these children in their care.
Mm-hmm.
And did they have any perceptions or misconceptions over the ideal type of family that they wanted these children to go to?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that I'd always been mindful of throughout the journey, whether they'd be open to consider me being suitable to raise children, because from the get-go, I'd been very clear that I wanted a sibling group,
mm-hmm.
and that was mm-hmm. almost a non-negotiable for me.
Yes.
So I had to not only convince them that I was a suitable adopter, but as a single female, I was capable of raising two children on my own as
mm-hmm.
well.
I mean, and it's a huge undertaking, but, you know, as maybe our listeners are aware, sibling groups and black sibling groups in particular are a really hard group of people to home and to find families for. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, you've come along and saying you want to adopt siblings, and, you know, from a black background, people were jumping up it to get you on their books. Was that the case?
Towards the end of the process, yes. But I think initially there was that hesitation around sibling groups can mm-hmm. be harder. Mm-hmm. And we need to find out that bit more about you before we're certain that you can have a sibling group.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yes, you know, definitely once I was going towards approval panel and once I registered on to Linkmaker, it was definitely, wow, you want a black sibling group? Here are the children that we're trying to place.
And that's often the story we hear, you know, even my own experience, again, you know, offering a mixed race or at least, you know, a black placement for black children. We were inundated when we, and of course, you know, I have siblings as well. So I very much identify with your story. And it just shows you how much in demand, how much of a need there is for black adopters to come forward to take these kids in. Right. So take me back to you. I guess my next question is, why were you so fixed on having siblings? What was it about siblings that you thought, one, you could manage, but two, you were really adamant you wanted?
I think for me, the main reason around siblings is when I was looking into the children that were in care, I read that there were a large amount of black and mixed race siblings. And I think the key thing there was that a lot of them, if they can't be placed together, then they're split up. And often the younger sibling is adopted and mm-hmm. the older sibling remains in long-term foster care. And for me, that was just heartbreaking because mm-hmm. I grew up very close to my older sister. And I always thought that if anything had happened to my mum growing up, then at least me and my sister would stay together.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't imagine how these children, you know, going through the care system, being removed from their birth family, how they would then cope with being separated.
Mm-hmm.
So I just knew that I'm going into this process to remove a black or mixed race sibling group from the care system. And that's what kept me going.
Wonderful. I guess I want to ask about the process itself, being approved then. You talked about maybe things getting easier towards the end. What was the beginning and the middle aspects of your journey like then? Were there any hurdles to overcome?
There were quite a few hurdles mm-hmm. because I think the reality of dealing with a local authority, I'd worked for local authority for about 11 years. So I knew that at times they weren't the quickest,
mm-hmm.
but it's very different when you're the service user. So there, it was quite frustrating because I think I was quite naive at the beginning of the journey. I'd read that stage one takes approximately 2 months and stage two is 4 months. So mm-hmm. I was thinking, wow, in about 6 months' time, I would have gone through the adoption process. It took a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think immediately there was that frustration around, oh, I thought we'd be here by this point and we're not, we're still at this stage. Is it something that I'm not doing quick enough? It's the reality of working with people who are also working with other people and trying to fit meetings in. We were still in lockdown, so people were getting used to remote working as well. Even things like having to do the medical assessment where GP appointments weren't as easy to come across. And here I was saying to my GP, I need this full medical as part of my adoption process, please. At a time when, you know, like I said, it was very hard to access these appointments. So I did find the process quite frustrating because I didn't tell a lot of people at the beginning, because one thing that I didn't want is for people to keep saying, when are you going to get children? When are you going to get them? And I was thinking, gosh, I've not even been approved yet. But then at the point that I did tell people towards the end of my journey, there were still further delays. So people were quite patient and they waited, but then they asked. And then I was saying, actually, no, there's another delay. There's another delay. So I did find the process quite hard. I think it definitely challenged me in terms of, do I really want this? Because I think if it wasn't something I was so passionate about, I possibly could have stopped the process.
Yeah, and that's a really important thing, to, I guess, you know, for the people who create the adoption system to hear. Of course, you know, delays, obstacles are inevitable, but sometimes it can be such an arduous process that people are deterred, and that's not what we want to do. So luckily, I'm glad to hear that you pushed it on ahead. Again, with my own personal story, we languished in stage one with our initial agency for a very long time. And it's that tenacity and that real clear vision of what the end goal was that kept us going. So, but not everyone has the same, I guess, level of resolve, not because they're not good enough parents, but they haven't got the same ability to hold on. So it's definitely things still need to keep being looked at and definitely developing and looking at ways. But yes, the 6-month guideline, I guess, is just a guideline. And me too, naively thought, oh my gosh, we're gonna have kids in 6 months. And I have to say, you know, there are some people that I meet who do it in 5.5 months and they happen to be lucky and it's very smooth. Or there are those people who, you know, who might take 7 months, 8 months. I guess every journey is individual. So with your individual story, you got approved finally and you went on Linkmaker. How soon after approval did you start really finding good potential matches for you?
So that happened very quickly. On the day of approval, my social worker contacted me after I'd been approved with a potential in-house match, 2 siblings, 2 young girls. And we very quickly started to have discussions around the children. But however, there was a link. I knew their birth father.
Oh, wow.
A colleague of mine.
Okay.
So we discounted that match very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I then went on to Linkmaker because my 2 non-negotiables were black and mixed race and a sibling group. We'd very quickly exhausted the in-house siblings.
Okay.
So within a month of being approved, I was on the Linkmaker database.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as my profile was up, I was matched to, or not matched to, but I'd expressed an interest in 4 sibling groups on Linkmaker.
Wow. Okay. And I want to go back a little bit because I think it's really interesting to find out. So are you able to share with us your heritage and your background?
Yes. So my family are Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
So I identify as a Black British Jamaican woman.
Okay. And was it important for you, this is just out of curiosity, to have, you know, children or a child who was from a Black Jamaican background specifically, or were you open to any kind of Black background as long as they had Black heritage?
I was open to any Black background or mixed race background.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't specifically Black Caribbean only or Black African only.
Okay. And do you think perhaps it would have been an extra element, I guess, of difficulty had it been an African child having to maybe provide for that cultural aspect versus the Caribbean background?
It's funny you say that, because when I was going through the approval process, my social worker said, oh, I'm going to book you on the interracial adoption training.
Oh, okay.
And I said, oh, why is that? And then I said, oh, because I'm interested in a mixed race sibling group. And she said, but also you could end up with a Black African sibling group.
Okay.
And your heritage isn't Black African. And I hadn't actually thought of that. I naively thought adopting a black child, mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd have to go through any additional training. I can completely understand why I didn't have to. But that hadn't occurred to me, that adopting a black African child, not being black African myself, mm-hmm. would warrant additional training.
That's interesting. I've never heard of that either. I think a lot of the time people assume in a really crude way, if you're black, that's good enough. And, you know, we'll match you with any black child. So I'm really pleased to hear that actually that's something that people are offering, saying actually, just because you have the same skin tone, the cultural differences are still going to be relevant and you're going to have to do some training around that. So that's really heartening to hear. So in your training, what came up for you when you found that you might be potentially matched with an African child? What things did you have to consider, did you think?
Well, surprisingly, a lot of the things that I thought I would do if I adopted a child of a different culture were really big no-nos.
Okay.
When we heard from people that had been adopted by adopters of a different cultural background. Mm-hmm. So, for example, one thing that I'm really into my food, I'm a massive foodie. And I always thought that if my child had a different ethnicity or a different heritage to myself, then one way we would explore their heritage would be through food and go mm-hmm. into restaurants that, you know, specialize in their cultural food. But mm-hmm. going on the training and hearing from an adoptee, she actually said that was the worst moment for her
Her
family took her to a Korean restaurant, because she said she felt so alone because she didn't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know which dishes were the best ones to order. She was sitting there with her non-Korean family and she just felt really out of place.
Wow, that's really powerful.
It was, because I was thinking, well, actually, that's the first thing that I was thinking to do. And then hearing from somebody saying, actually, that's a big no-no. Mm. It really made me think differently on how I would explore my children's culture with them.
Okay, that's interesting, because I think, you know, often in my other capacity as a panel member, we often like to hear again this idea that people are going to immerse their child in the food, but I never realized it could be such an alienating experience. So that's one for us to process and think about, actually. Interesting. Okay, sorry, so I've taken you a bit off the point. Let's go back to the original point about, you know, you were matched with or potentially matched with four sibling groups. Talk us through those four groups. And are one of those groups the children you've ended up with now?
Yes, definitely.
Wonderful.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So the second sibling group that we explored, I actually went to meet them at what they call a teddy bears picnic,
okay.
where it's an event for children waiting to be adopted and adopters to come down, really to show the children that adopters aren't scary. They like to have fun. Here's a group of them. You can play. But I'd gone specifically with a sibling group in mind. I was able to spend a few hours playing with them, talking to their foster carer and finding out a bit more about them as well. After that picnic ended, I then had about a week and a half before we had a meeting with my social worker and their social worker to discuss whether the match was going to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought long and hard about it, but I didn't feel a strong enough connection. And I was 50-50.
Okay.
I knew that if I became their mum, I would love them. I would do everything for them. I would give them everything I could. But I also knew that if I didn't become their mum, I wouldn't regret it. I didn't think that was fair on the children. They deserve somebody who is 100% sure, not 50-50. And I also didn't think it was fair on me as well,
mm-hmm.
to go into this only feeling 50-50.
Wow, I really respect that. And I really respect the fact that you're sharing that with us, because actually that's really honest. And people need to be really honest with adoption, because adoption isn't easy. So you have to be 100% in as much as you can be, maybe 99%, because nothing's ever 100%. So the fact that you were 50-50 and you realized that wasn't good enough, I think takes a lot of personal insight. So congratulations on that. How did you move on and how did you find your current sons now?
So we were looking at sibling groups at the same time, but my children who now live with me, there was almost like a final court process, which meant we couldn't proceed straight away with them. Once I discounted the second sibling group, I had a message from the social worker or the family finder of my boys to say, we've gone through it, all the paperwork's finished, are you ready to have that discussion? And from there, We had a discussion. I was sent their child permanence reports, their CPRs.
Yeah.
And there was just something about them from the beginning where I knew I wanted them to be my children.
Mm-hmm.
I can't explain what it was, but there was just something about them that felt different from the beginning stage.
And what ages were they at the time? And what was the age difference between the two of them?
So they were 2 and 3.
Okay, very close in age.
Very close in age. It's just under a year and a half between them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also 2 and 3 when they came to live with me.
But okay.
Now both had birthdays, so they're now 3 and 4.
And are they full blood siblings, i.e. they share the same mother and father?
They are full siblings, yes.
And is that important for you? Did you think that they both, the shared history for the two children you were going to adopt?
Having full siblings wasn't necessarily a priority for me.
Mm-hmm.
I would have still been very keen if they were only half siblings because they'd been living together.
Yep.
So that wouldn't have been a deterrent.
Mm-hmm. Great. Talk me through the early days of meeting your children, bringing them home and finding your feet as a mother for the first time.
So meeting them for the first time was just amazing. It's what they refer to as an accidental bump. So they met me not in the capacity of their new mum, but a friend of their foster carers. It was a play day in the park. And I remember pulling into the car park. My sister had come with me and she said, oh my gosh, I've just seen one of them. And it's because when you can only see pictures and videos, it's such a different feeling when you see your children in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to run around with them and talk to them and just actually see them was just amazing, just to be with them. It was a really nice feeling. I hadn't officially been matched to them at this stage, although we'd agreed that the match was going to go ahead. I hadn't yet been to matching panel, which was again one of the reasons why I was introduced to them the way I was. But it was amazing. It was amazing. I still remember that day, and I don't think I will forget that day. And I don't have biological children. I haven't given birth to children, but I can only imagine it's similar to when people give birth to a child and they see their child in real life for the first time.
That sounds so beautiful. Again, bringing up memories of my own experience, and you, the smile on your face says it all. If our listeners could see your face, they'd know. So the early days, I've interrupted you now. So you were going on about, you're talking about, you know, meeting them for the first time. After that bump into meeting and taking them home, what was the process? How long did it take? Were there any obstacles, any further obstacles, I guess?
So the bump into meeting was towards the end of the matching process. It actually took 9 months from seeing the boys initially on Linkmaker to bringing them home was a 9-month process. And I think part of that was because they weren't an in-house match. So we had two adoption agencies working together.
Mm-hmm.
They both had their own ways of working. Trying to arrange meetings with so many different professionals, I was always like, I can meet whenever.
Yeah.
I will cancel a meeting. I will be flexible. But not everybody had that same amount of flexibility. And when you add in annual leave and sickness, sometimes nothing happened for 3 weeks.
Yes.
Because that was the earliest we could do a meeting. And then you'd have a meeting and then you'd have to wait a week or so for people to consider what the next step would be. And all in all, it took 9 months.
Yes. This is another thing that, you know, I guess obviously we're always looking at ways to improve the process. But, you know, 9 months is a long time in the life of a 2 or 3 year old. It's a significant chunk. That's 9 months where they could have been with you. And again, similarly with my story, there were delays. And I'm just wondering what the people in power can do to expedite this process, you know, because 9 months really feels like far too long, especially if you've identified a potential match and it all looks like it's going to be going ahead anyway. A 9-month delay feels just a little bit too long. I don't know if you agree.
I definitely agree.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would take 9 months. I think it's hard because children's services across the country are under such financial pressure. I think there's also a lack of resources at times. And you then have people that are just trying to do so many things at the same time. You just have to slot in when they're available. Now, with my finance director hat on, I think to myself, rather than leave children in the care system for 9 months, bring in additional resources so you can work through the matching process quicker. Mm-hmm. And then those children aren't staying in the care system. Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking them out of the care system quicker. You're matching them with their adoptive parents a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So you're, yes, you are incurring additional costs, but then not only is there a financial saving because you've taken them out of the care system quicker, but you've placed them with their forever family quicker. And mm-hmm. then there's no value on that.
No, absolutely not. I think someone might be contacting you for some financial direction now that you've proposed that. But it makes sense. It just makes sense. But as we know, just because we can sit here, as you've said, you know, adoption becomes your whole world and your whole focus. But then there are 12, 13 other cases that your social worker may be dealing with. And actually, you know, you are one of many. So it can be very frustrating. Just hope that, you know, things are going to be improving, especially when we know that these kids are waiting for such long periods of time. I want to ask you now about representation in the process. Was it important for you to be able to identify other Black professionals, other Black adopters, other Black single adopters that you could maybe tap into and share experiences with, or just someone that you identified with and felt some sort of familiarity with?
It was really important. And that's something that I just assumed would be there again, mm-hmm. because of it being 2020 and 2021 when I finished the process, being in London, I just assumed that I would have the opportunity to meet Black adopters across the board. And in fact, I met one Black adopter at the very beginning of my journey mm-hmm. at an online Meet the Adopter event. And then the next time I saw a Black adopter was at the approval panel.
Okay.
There were no other Black adopters mm-hmm. during my journey. And I think it was quite difficult for me because when you're going through a long journey, that's very challenging and you really have to push through. What would have been really helpful for me would be to see people that had, you know, similar background to me, similar circumstances, but to see that they'd gone through the process and had a positive outcome. Because that would have given me that reassurance that it will happen to me as well.
Yeah, it's a two-pronged thing. I think maybe, as we know, in the Black community, adoption still isn't at a rate where we'd like it to be. So there just are fewer adopters in the system that are able to come forward. But also, I think it's about creating a space that welcomes Black adopters once they are adopted and keeping them in the mainstream, keeping them as part of the conversation. What do you think can be done to improve the visibility of Black adopters or also to spread the word about Black adoption for people who are considering? I personally still feel, you know, in the main, a lot of the Black community, Caribbean and African or other Black groups, sometimes find adoption a difficult thing to contend with. What are your thoughts on all that? I said a lot at you, so take your time.
So I think in terms of the Black community, if I think to my childhood and growing up, I had many friends that weren't formally adopted, but they weren't living with their birth parents. They were living with an aunt, an uncle, grandparents, or even family friends. And sometimes it was because their birth parents were living in the Caribbean or mm-hmm. in a different country, or for other circumstances, they just weren't able to live with their birth family. So I think adoption maybe wasn't as popular in the Black mm-hmm. community as it was within some other communities. I think we do definitely need more visibility because Black people have been adopting for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as visible in the Black community as it is in others. And I think that's a shame because whenever I've spoken to people, Black friends, family members, colleagues, about my desire to adopt and my adoption journey, I've been met with really great support.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm almost thinking, so why isn't it happening more in the Black community? What is it? You know, people do think there are barriers. And I think that stopped people from pursuing adoption. I remember speaking to one colleague who said to me, I don't see it. With homeless people, I see them sleeping on the streets. Okay. But with Black children waiting to be adopted, I don't see Black children being mistreated. So it doesn't feel as visible. I come from a borough that doesn't have a large amount of Black people in terms of the demographic. So the local authority aren't crying out for Black adopters.
Interesting.
And I'm thinking that's something then for the local authority. That's something for them to take mm-hmm. on in terms of how can they approach prospective Black adopters? Because I'm sure there are Black children across most, if not all, of London boroughs that are in the care system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's almost a challenge for local authorities on how are they recruiting? How are they advertising? How are they trying to reach out and engage with Black people who potentially could become adopters or foster carers or could mm-hmm. just help out children in care? Because I think more needs to be done. The reality is we do have a lot of Black children, Black and mixed race children in care, and the figures do say that they wait the longest.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, you have two sons, I have two sons. So Black boys in particular are waiting really, really long periods of time. I mean, I'm just trying to think out loud as well. I wonder what could be done, because even we talk about boroughs in London, up and down the country, if you have a child who happens to be Black in Scarborough, for example, you know, we still need, you know, there could be potential parents for them in London. Adoption isn't limited to the borough that you're in, at least not exclusively. There are people who adopt across the country. So I really think it's about, I guess, I'm just not sure how we can engage the Black community. And I'm wondering what it is that holds them back. Visibility is one thing we've talked about. They just don't see it. But also, I wonder if there's a stigma maybe with infertility sometimes. You know, maybe a person's manhood or womanhood is called into question. Maybe there's an element of taboo. I can't put my finger on it. I'm desperate to get the message out that we need more Black adopters. You know, it's a really rewarding thing to do, and we need to get them to come forward. I don't know if you have any ideas on top of your head what we could be doing about how to recruit adopters.
I think it's just continuing to get the message out, to get the word out, really using existing adopters to tap into their networks, not forgetting people once they've adopted.
Mm-hmm.
Using them to carry on the message, to carry on telling their friends and family. Also for local authorities to think about how they are trying to recruit adopters. Don't just wait for National Adoption Week to try and do a really big marketing campaign. You should be doing that throughout the year.
Exactly.
You also, I think there's a real issue in terms of why we have so many Black children in care and why mm-hmm. the outcome for them so often is adoption. That's something that needs tackling as mm-hmm. well. But in terms of the children that we do have, they need to take more of a focus on how can we find the right adopters for the children that we have in care.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be that they have to be open to placing a Black child with a mixed race parent. Mm-hmm. Or a non-Black parent. They need to remove any stereotypes that they have in what a perfect family looks like.
Yes. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. Often when I sit on panels, you know, we often look for some commonality between the children and the parents, because adoption is a complex situation for a child in terms of identity. And the understanding, I think, is that, you know, it's helpful for the children to have parents that reflect some of what they look like. So a child can look up at their parents, even if they're adopted or not, and still see themselves reflected back. The jury is still out on whether or not a fully white couple, for example, might be able to adopt a Black child. Because believe me, there are plenty of non-Black adopters who are open to any ethnicity. And sometimes the question now in our panels is, you know, that's great, but how can their needs be met? How can their cultural and identity needs be met? So I guess that's a wider conversation to be having. But bringing it back to you specifically in your story, so your two sons, what was their ethnic background and how close to yours did it match?
So quite close. My boys are mixed race, Black Caribbean and white British. So okay. I share 50% of their mm-hmm. heritage. So it's quite a close match.
Okay. And in terms of providing for the white side of their heritage, is that something you had to think about, something that you are actively working on?
So for me, going through the matching process, it was something that I had to consider. I was asked specifically how I was going to meet the needs of the white British element to their culture. Mm-hmm. And it really made me think about my support network and who was going to be around my boys growing up, because mm-hmm. I really wanted them to, within the people that they would see most often, I didn't want it to be black single females, because that's who their mum is. I didn't yes. want them to be surrounded by people that look like me and think like me, and because that's only given them one perspective. So having two mixed race boys, I was really keen to make sure that my support network consisted of role models, really, mm-hmm. so that they could be surrounded by people of all different ethnicities, but also making sure that I had a sufficient amount of male role models mm-hmm. for them as well.
I'm going to ask something that may be a little bit controversial, but I feel like I'm well placed to say this. You know, my children are mixed race too. And I often have the conversation with my white partner that, you know, my sons, our sons, in this context of the society we live in at the moment, will be seen as black before they're seen as white. What is your take on that? And what is your, what is your view on that?
I'd agree 100%. I think people will view my boys, and although they are clearly mixed race, I think they will be seen as black first. Mm-hmm. And I think in some sense, that's why I'm even more keen to make sure that I can promote the white British element to their heritage mm-hmm. as well, because yeah. I think that will be overlooked by some people as they're growing up.
Absolutely.
People will forget that they are half white British and will mm-hmm. only focus on the black Caribbean side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel that I owe it to my boys to expose them to both elements of their
Absolutely.
Heritage. And then as they grow up, they've got that good grounding, and then they mm-hmm. can decide how they take that forward when they're a lot older.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So I think you are about, just over a year into motherhood now. Are you? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, just over a year in terms of approval.
Approval, okay.
Coming up to 6 months in terms
of motherhood.
Oh, so
it's very early days. So how's it going for you? Tell us, is it everything you thought it was going to be?
Everything and more. The good parts, I underestimated how good the good mm-hmm. parts would be. And definitely being a mum to my boys has shown me a type of love that I never thought was possible until my two boys came into my life. I honestly didn't know it was possible mm-hmm. to love two people this much. But at the same time,
I knew there was a but coming.
I've also never experienced such frustration as mm-hmm. well, because I think children nowadays are just different. Because okay. I remember growing up and being told something by my mum, for example, dinner's ready, here's your dinner. There was no option of, I want this instead. It was, this is your dinner. You take it or you leave it.
Yes.
If you don't want it, you can put it in the oven and warm it up later when you're ready for it.
Yeah.
Whereas my boys will gladly say, I want chicken nuggets today. I didn't want to have this. And I'm thinking, I didn't grow up with choice. I was just given dinner.
Yes.
These children now are telling me what they want. So I think it's different. Being a single mother, I've had to rely on my support network a lot more mm-hmm. just for having somebody to just speak to, because the initial stage when my boys came to live with me, we were almost cocooned mm-hmm. because the focus was on building that attachment. They weren't introduced to friends and family straight away, with the exception of my sister, because she'd met them at the accidental bump. She'd come with me when I went to collect them to bring them home as well. But when you're around children, you almost forget how to speak to adults, because
absolutely
everything is around, you know, you tailor your speaking to what a 2 and a 3 year old can understand. All of the programs you watch are children's programs. Mm-hmm. And then you come to have an adult conversation and you actually forget how to speak.
Wow.
you haven't had to have those adult conversations because mm-hmm. your life revolves around the children.
Yeah.
And I remember being so tongue-tied because I just thought, I can't remember what word it is, because my brain, I had mum brain.
Yeah.
I couldn't really focus on things because I'd spent so much time engulfed in the world of my children.
Yeah.
I almost forgot what it was like as an adult.
But also you're exhausted. I mean, two toddlers close in age. My boys are a year and 3 weeks apart in age. Again, very close in age. And two at once, it's exhausting. Of course you're forgetting words. You know, it's a full-on commitment. And the fact that you've done it as a single adopter is just awe-inspiring. And, you know, it really is. You know, it can be done, but it takes a special kind of person to do what you're doing, Esther. So I think it really must be commended for that. And yeah, so you're 6 months in, you're definitely tired. Yes. Yeah. What does the future look like, do you think?
The future looks positive.
Good.
The cocooning at the beginning, although it was quite hard, the attachment that has developed is just amazing with my boys. They feel so secure. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think in the first week, we'd had a picnic in the park and one of my friends saw me and came over and the boys literally hid behind me, uh-huh, clinging to my legs. Now, if we're out and somebody comes up to us, that the boys are like, hi, I'm so-and-so. And, you know, they're so confident because, mm-hmm, they're so much more secure in, mm-hmm, their environment now. It's, yep, not, I've been taken away from my foster carers, I'm now living with you, is somebody else coming to take me away? They know that this is home, that I'm their mum, this is where they live. And that security, I think, has helped them to settle into school and nursery. They've gone in really confident. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I've seen quite a few other children literally screaming at the school dates because they don't want to leave their parents. And my two boys are just like, bye, mum, see you later.
Aww.
That is because of that time that we've spent together and making sure that they know this is home and giving them that extra time, mm-hmm, I'm now reaping the reward. So I'm really confident about the future. That's not to say that there won't be challenges, because, mm-hmm, I think regardless of how you create your family, whether you give birth to children, adopt or foster, I think children just have that unique ability to change from one moment to another. And I expect that as they grow older and there are maybe identity issues, or as they go through their teenage years, I'm sure there are going to be challenges. My friends that have boys assure me that boys are easier than girls. That doesn't necessarily mean boys are easy.
It, yes, just
means that, in their opinion, boys are easier than girls. But who knows?
We'll see, I guess. I mean, I'll let you know. I'm a few years ahead of you, so I'll let you know. But at the moment, boys are hard work because they're so physical and so boisterous at the moment. They're minor 5 and 6, that I just pray for them to sit down and read a book and play with a doll or something. So maybe we'll reap the rewards when in teenage years, where they're chilled, hopefully, and the girls are having their, you know, their crises. Who knows? Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of our wonderful discussion, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing your story. What's the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners, I guess especially to our Black listeners perhaps, who may be on the fence about adoption or at the very beginning of their journey? What would you like to leave as a last thought?
I'd like to give them the reassurance that it can happen, that it's worth it. It's a long journey. It's a hard journey, but it is worth it. So please do persevere. But also, if there are any listeners that are supporting people in their friendship circles, their family circles who are going through adoption, think of how best you can support them, because they are really going through a challenging moment. And they might just say, there's no updates at the moment. That doesn't mean there isn't anything to update. That just means potentially they are experiencing a lot of frustration and could really do with some support. And I guess lastly, I'd like to say, really think about perhaps some of the terms that you've grown up saying that maybe are no longer appropriate. So, for example, I've had people say to me, will the boys see their real mum or will they see their natural mum? And I've then turned around and said, well, what does that make me? Their unnatural mum. And they, mm-hmm, said, oh, sorry, what should I say? So I give them the correct terminology. And I don't think people have said that to be deliberately rude or offensive.
No.
But they've grown up using terms like real mum, natural mum. But as an adoptive mum, that's actually quite hurtful. So just consider how best you can support people that are going through the adoption journey. And if you're going through it yourself, just remember that you can have a positive outcome. It is hard, but it will be worth it.
Wise words there from Esther. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. It's so good to see you after, you know, a year of approval, and just to see that you seem to be really flourishing. So more power to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Eddie.
I'm Eddie Elliott, and you've been listening to Adoption Shared, created by the We Are Family Adoption Support Community in partnership with Adopt London. Remember to subscribe if you enjoyed this podcast and follow us on Twitter. We hope you'll be back for more adoption stories and information soon. Have a great day.